Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, Fancy Sauce Show listeners, and welcome to episode 3 of season 3 with Jordan Poulton.
Cheng Kui.
John Beebe.
Hello.
And myself, Oliver Coles. Hello. So, I think we wanted to kick off this week talking about the sports events of the weekend.
Yeah, the Six Nations.
Six Nations.
It seems to be turning into a ridiculously, competitive competition. Usually you've got, Scotland at the bottom, or Italy. They're fighting out for who's going to get the wooden spoon. Mm-hmm. You've got England and France at the top. But everything's been turned on its head. France are firmly at the bottom. Scotland are second. They just beat Ireland.
Scotland can actually still win the Six Nations.
It's insane.
That is ridiculous. Which has just never happened before. And actually, Scotland are really happy about themselves for winning two games in a row.
Yeah. For the first time ever.
For the first time ever.
In the history of Scotland.
No, yeah. I think that
they've never won anything two times in a row, have they?
No, but, well, Chris Hoy's Scottish, isn't he?
Maybe chucking the caber or whatever they call it.
Tossing the caber.
Just tossing, full stop.
I think they're really happy they beat Ireland, because Ireland are a pretty solid team.
Yeah, that's
team.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So that's really good. Italy are doing, Italy beat...
Much better. They beat France.
So that's a good result.
I'm not going to lie, I haven't seen a single game.
No. Which is surprising, because he used to play quite a lot of rugby.
I like rugby. Yeah. I just have been so busy that I haven't had a chance to watch anything.
Why not? What have you been doing?
I've been coding.
Are you coding?
Yeah.
Ooh. We've got a techie on our hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I've been watching Brian Cox.
Yeah, he can piss off.
Mate, why would you say such a thing?
Because he's trying to be, whatever his name is, Sir David Attenborough.
He's not trying to be anyone, he's being Brian Cox.
No, he's got that pathetic, whiny...
It's his voice that really dicks me off. We love nature. And everything's so... It's not Attenborough.
His voice.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
Because he's not an old man yet. You can't hate him.
He's going to get worse when he's an old man.
He's a tenor. He's not a baritone. That's not his fault.
They should do something in the post-sound thing with him.
Can you imagine him with his little girly face going, we love nature.
Well, it's the difference between Attenborough, who'd be like, looking through the long green grass, to looking through the long green grass.
It's also that he's northern as well.
I like the fact that it's pitched at, it doesn't try and assume that you're not intelligent. He says things that are difficult to understand, and he explains things that are difficult to understand.
Maybe that's why we don't like it.
Maybe.
I don't know, it's definitely his voice, because I did, after we'd kind of initially spoken about it a couple of weeks ago, I sat down and watched, I think, about 3 minutes of it, and I got so annoyed at, him just kind of... He's overly camp. He kind of floats around the field being like, we're all surrounded by nature. Shut up. Just show me a picture of a lion eating a zebra.
But it's not about pictures. That's the point. It's not about the pictures. It's about how he's explaining extremely complicated concepts in a really understandable way. Like yesterday I was watching one and he's talking about dropping things from a height and talking about gravity's effect on them. And he goes... When you drop something, they follow a geodesic through space, through curved space-time. And
that's when I would switch off.
But I like the fact that he doesn't try and boil it down to the lowest common denominator, because so much that's on TV nowadays is aimed at the fucking moron who shops at Lidl and then gets annoyed because it's horse meat.
Whoa. Don't compartmentalise the people that shop at Lidl as morons. They're finding a good deal.
No, I think it's a good thing. I was saying the people who shop at Lidl who get surprised that they're eating horse meat, not the person who shops at Lidl. I think the person who shops at Lidl is doing well, but you've got to expect some horse meat in there.
This whole horse meat thing, by the way, annoys me. Why hasn't Tesco been shut down?
I think the opposite. What's the problem with horses?
No, there's nothing.
Horses are actually more expensive to eat anyway. If you go to France, not a knackered horse.
Just not a knackered. A lame horse. Half of it's gone to the Yoo-hoo factory, and the other half's just been
shoved. Yeah, literally, it's like the bits that they won't turn into glue, they'll put into pies in Tesco's. But the way I see it is what's so wrong with horse meat?
No, someone said that actually it's healthier. Horse meat's actually healthier than beef, but. The whole thing is it's about mislabeling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if Red Bull all of a sudden sold something and it's we've got a new formula and they've just put cocaine in it? And it's okay.
Yeah, but cocaine's... I buy it.
Yeah, but cocaine's illegal. That's the difference. I mean, if it would be a replacement...
Is it illegal to eat horse meat in the UK?
No, it's not illegal. It's just something that we don't do because of culture and history.
In Spain, don't they eat dogs or something?
No,
they eat a horse in mainland Europe in a lot of countries.
Yeah, no, I didn't see an issue with if a horse is bred to be eaten, then fine.
Or if a horse gets injured and is going to be killed, then
Hang on, wait, what's the actual problem here?
Like, it's mislabeling.
Okay, but why does that matter? You're being told that you're eating beef and you're eating pork, so you still enjoy the meal. So
no, what's but the problem is it's like, it's for people that would, I mean, it's not
what,
for...
That
it's
I don't for, eat horse.
Yeah, but like, it's like, for me, if someone was like, oh, you just ate horse, I'd be like, okay, it was, you know, it was tasty, fine. It's not going to kill me. That I'm fine with that. But the problem is there are people that are like, oh my God, I can't believe that you made me horse without, you know, and they get all, and then they label. Call up Anne Robinson.
There is a big label. It's the fucking price. If you buy a family pie for £1,
yeah, but that's
no, a big label.
No, exactly.
It should always say it contains horse meat. It shouldn't be.
Okay, so why doesn't it say it contains camel toe and hoof and yeah, and, I mean, and nose?
And also, you get these horrible like 99p for 8 sausages, and they're not saying, oh, they've got labia and fucking trotters and stuff. Pork. And, like penis.
No, but it's still pork. It comes from a pig. It's
yeah,
a
but if they had a label on it that said this is primarily composed of ears, penises, labia, and
rectum.
Guts and rectum, then people would be up in arms again. But it's like, well, then what are you saying? Because we didn't label it. We didn't tell you that this is 19%
also,
rectum.
Also, I don't know if this is true, but you know the whole thing about McDonald's saying all of our burgers are 100% beef?
Yeah. That's a brand name, isn't
apparently
it?
Apparently, it's a brand name of a company that's called 100% beef.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with the fact that it is 100% pure beef.
Yeah, it's clever.
Which is quite, I think it's quite funny, to be honest. But I just, like, I don't know if you can be allergic to horse meat. You know, like some people are allergic to beef or allergic to chicken. I don't think
well,
they
maybe,
ever are.
Maybe
that's just rubbish.
Maybe there are a lot of people who think they're allergic to beef, but
yeah.
They're not. They're actually allergic to horse meat because they've been eating Findus products all their life.
I mean, I don't know, but I just think that a company that is that big, all they had to do was like, yeah, sorry, and they got away with it. And I genuinely think it's something to do with like the amount of fucking jobs that they
is
create.
It not probably to do with where they source their meat from and they
well,
don't
know.
Well,
that's the thing that they say. They're like, oh, well, we didn't know. It's like, yeah, you did. Of course you did. Like, of course they do like stock checks on stuff and things like that. But also what I don't know is, like, were people selling almost like 90% horse and 10% beef? Or is it the fact that they just used the machine a couple of times ago and not washed it properly, and there's just trace, like, you know, it's like this may contain traces
what,
of
like
nuts.
Someone when they went after hours in the factory and put a horse through the mixer. Like, oops, forgot to clean it.
For themselves. Yeah, like, yeah. My horse has died, I'm hungry tonight, let's shove it through.
Yeah, exactly.
No one will know.
I feel like some minced horse.
But I don't know who's really to blame, but I just think, how do major corporations get away with it?
I think the people who are to blame are the morons who are buying it, thinking that they were going to be buying proper, decent quality meat when they're spending £1 on a family-sized lasagna.
Because they're definitely not eating quality meat in the first place.
No,
they're
exactly.
They're eating shitty parts of beef,
yeah.
Of cows. And
yeah, and like, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be doing that. I'm saying you shouldn't moan.
Just accept the fact you're eating shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this week, for some bizarre technology that we found, I found a couple of interesting pieces, both of which have come from Japan.
Always.
Bizarreness.
They're actually a couple years old now, but one of them is a kiss transmission device, okay, which is a box that you have and a box that your girlfriend has, and she lives overseas and you don't get to see each other much. Out of this box is like a straw/tongue-shaped object.
Is it made of straw, is it?
No, it's kind of, yeah, it's plastic. It's
okay.
Plastic. Not hay straw. It's not like chewing on grass. But you basically, you move your mouth around it and you move this tongue and then it moves the tongue in another place.
So it replicates what your movement of your tongue
does
on there.
But it is a box, it's
so
not a face.
So on one side you put your tongue in it, on the other side it
is
a tongue?
No, it's actually just a tongue coming out
on, both, sides.
On both sides. So
okay.
One person moves the tongue,
right.
And then the other person sees it moving and puts it in their mouth and goes, oh shit, it's just like kissing my boyfriend who's got a box head and a plastic piece of straw going through his mouth.
That sounds disgusting.
So it's like cyber kissing, basically. It's,
or cyber giving head.
I know, that's what
I
thought.
That's what it could be actually quite useful for, because you could just flick it with your fingers, right? We can make it vibrate.
Yeah,
and the girl could just place it between her.
And she could put some lube on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Pleasure box. They should call it the pleasure box.
Yeah, exactly.
But why not just make a completely kind of like synthetic tongue? Like exactly the same.
Uh-huh.
But then surely for the tongue you'd need to put to it replicate perfectly, you'd need to put your tongue into it and then move.
Yeah, on one side it would need to be like a plug of you going in and the other side it coming out.
Well really it should be a cast of your face as well, so you're not kissing a plastic box. It
and then it's gonna get into full robot stuff. It's a bit weird.
It's very odd.
And who's buying these things? That's what I'm always wondering with this technology
stuff. Well, I don't think anyone is. I actually just googled bizarre tech or shit tech, and this came up from 2011 as one of the top 10 shit techs of 2011.
See, I find all that sort of stuff, like, it's just a little bit, like, strange. Like, why not just...
Well, who invests money into this? Who thinks, right, I really miss my girlfriend. I want a box that I can kiss.
Yeah, and spend, what, maybe $10,000 on creating this box that everyone's going to go... Like, if you saw that in someone's house, it's like, what's this? It's like, oh, so I can kiss my girlfriend while she's in Japan.
Yeah.
It'd be a bit like, that's a bit weird.
But something strikes me that potentially it was made by some really lonely guy who's never kissed anyone in the real world.
Because they don't know what a tongue's like or a face.
And they thought, well, maybe if I can, like, persuade someone on the internet to, like, kiss me through this special device, I can see what it feels like. And they're probably a sweaty old Japanese engineer.
Yeah, it's just... Like, why? Like, do you know what I mean? And what happens if you get addicted to the way the box kisses you, and then you meet your girlfriend again, you're like, you're a shit kisser.
You don't kiss like the box.
Yeah, you don't kiss like the box. Get out of my life. I'll get someone else to just kiss the box.
I think that's more unlikely than people wanting to buy it in the first place.
Getting addicted to the box.
Getting addicted to a box.
But then the second one is actually quite interesting, right?
Yeah, the second one's really interesting. It's actually a jacket, essentially, some Japanese guys have made, and it is a virtual hugging device. So you put it on, and you hug it, and it recognises how much you're hugging, and then it hugs you back.
With the same amount of pressure, and the same feeling, and it replicates the feeling around the body, and that
exactly.
sort of stuff. I think that's ingenious.
Well,
see,
really.
I think that's really clever, because, I mean, a good use case that I have a lot of friends who've experienced is you have family who are overseas, or, like, fathers in Afghanistan... And all they want to do is hug their family. And if they can, like, send a real hug and the person can feel it as if they're really being hugged...
Yeah, but that's slightly different. This is you hugging yourself.
Yeah, this is you hugging yourself, mate. This isn't someone overseas hugging you, unless you think this already exists. But this isn't you have two jackets...
Okay.
...and one person hugs a jacket...
Well, like
and
a, the jacket like a hugs- punch bag. You don't have a punch bag that you hug... Or you hug and then it sends a transmission to, like, your family... And
no,
then
this
it-
is... No, sorry, this is a vest that hugs you back...
Okay, this is actually shit.
Yeah. It's like, again, like, it's just invented by a lonely person that is obsessed with their own hug.
But if there was, like, a dummy that if you hugged it, then that strength of hug would be replicated through the jacket, through the internet, then I think that would be really good.
But how about this? What about if you're just, it's like a training someone to hug properly? You know, like, some people would probably hug a little bit too hard, or just, like, you know, it's like, imagine if they could invent a handshake machine where it's like, shake this, and then we'll shake it back, and then you realise that your handshake's really limp, or you know, you're a hand crusher, wankers, all of them. I fucking hate that. Like, when you go and you go to, like, a nice, like, meal or something like that, and you meet a load of people you've never met before, which is also, I've just come back from Italy, really bizarre that men... kiss each other twice on the cheek. Like,
that's alright.
No, I'm fine. I'm not freaked out by it. But that's not the freaky bit. It's when they make the noise of kissing.
It's when they use tongues.
Yeah, it's when they use tongues. That freaks out. When they start licking your earlobe a little bit. But I think if you could train to do, like, stuff like that, I think there's a use for it. Like, as in, if you came
what?
Went to a new
country, you think
wouldn't it
you
be easier for a person to do it?
Someone would buy a handshaking machine.
A handshaking practicer.
No, not a practicer. But let's say you ran a company and you're like, right, it's all about first impressions. Get in the handshaking machine room. Fuck, they're not coming out until we
you
know.
Just say, I'd like you to shake my hand 25 times and I'll give you feedback each time. Wouldn't that be a lot easier?
Then
maybe
might,
not, but if you
they might accuse you of sexually abusing them or something. He decides to touch me. I quite like shaking people's hands and going in for the surprise, just moving your index finger and just stroking their palm.
Even someone that you don't know.
Even someone I don't know.
Just to mix it up.
I remember telling a friend who hadn't met my father yet to do that to my father, and my father was massively angry. We went up and just tickled him. He said, we don't do that here. But do you think that with this black... It's a black vest that stimulates a hug through programmed air compressions. Do you think that you could suffocate yourself? By hugging too hard.
Okay. Or you just pass out, and then it's just gripped you because you've passed out, and it's just like, it's locked on, you're dead.
That
you could kill
bizarre
yourself.
Things.
Man dead, man dead by hugging himself too hard.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an asphyxie wank gone wrong.
But I don't know. I mean, there must be other things. I mean, there are obviously, like, you know, sex replicators and all that sort of stuff where people are, like, shagging plastic vaginas or... you know, sex machines.
Yeah, because there are some
things... I love
things,
how you pretend like you don't know.
I've no idea.
There are some things where you can get them moulded, you can get the vagina moulded out of your girlfriend's vagina, and then when she puts the dildo, which has been moulded out of your penis,
right,
into her, then it moves remotely.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah,
that actually exists?
That actually exists.
See, that is weird. Like, for me, that's really,
like,
really...
She
must have to wear, like, a cap inside or around her area.
But no, but she could strap on, like, a kind of weird pair of pants.
Yeah.
And then if you had this remote thing that you were shagging, then as you pushed in, it could then thrust forward, and as you pulled back, it could then pull out again.
So boom. Complete that would work. Real cyber sex, basically.
Yeah, we should get in touch with these weird Japanese engineers.
And have sex with each other.
It'd be...
Who's gonna... Maybe we need some volunteers from our listeners. Who's about to do this?
No, I just think it's so weird. Like, why not just wait... Surely the sex is going to be better than, like, shagging a kind of rubber pair of pants.
Yeah, but what about if, like, I don't know, there's a guy who's tweeting a lot from the International Space Station, and they're up there for maybe, like, a year or 18 months. Maybe they could use it for them. It could be, like, a government...
That'd be quite good.
Government
edition. Or, again, for soldiers who are overseas who want to pleasure their women to make sure that they don't leave them or anything.
Yeah.
Boomtang.
No, I disagree wholeheartedly with this. I think it's bizarre.
I like it.
Mm. Yeah, but you would.
And now, for everyone's favourite part of the show, question time.
Looking through the long green grass at question time.
Okay, this week I've been looking at a few idioms, and I think it might be quite interesting for me to kind of throw a few at you guys, and we can start with you first explaining what they actually mean. And then secondly, trying to give an account of where you think they might have come from and
their
how
origin.
They might have come about, their origin, exactly.
Okay. What's the dictionary definition of an idiom, apart from Rick Leggett?
No, that's an idiot.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I don't actually know what the dictionary definition is. I can find out.
Yeah, I just, you know, I just think I'm also interested about where, like, things like...
Where the word idiom came from.
Yeah, where the word idiom came from. I think that's quite interesting. Like, analogy.
It's an expression whose meaning is not predictable from the usual meaning of its constituent elements.
Of course it does. I don't know why I didn't know.
Odds.
Obvi. Okay.
All right, so the first one is balls to the wall.
Balls to the wall.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Yeah,
balls to the wall is probably, like, hiding or something.
Is it hiding? Or is it...
So use it in a sentence.
Balls to the wall, boys. The Germans are coming.
It's interesting that you use the Germans analogy. I don't think it means hiding. I think it means,
let's,
like...
Let's be hard. Strengthen up or something.
I think it means, like...
No, I don't know...
How do you get an erection?
I think it means to go fast.
Does it, like, foot on the pedal?
Or like
pedal to the metal, exactly. Because apparently where it comes from is that it's an old fighter plane thing, which is why I was surprised that you mentioned the Germans thing, because I expect that they did say, like, the balls to the wall, the Germans are coming. And it was, because the balls are the knobs on the throttle controls of a plane.
And you push them forward
exactly.
All the way up to the
so
wall.
So when the pilot goes full throttle, the knobs were pushed all the way to the wall of the cockpit, so they're called going balls
so
to the wall.
So it is literally like pedal to the metal in a car.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas if you'd better the metal on a plane, you just roll the plane, I guess.
Correct. You would do.
Good. Good aviation knowledge.
Okay. Next one. The bee's knees.
The bee's knees, which of course means cool,
mm-hmm.
basically.
So at least finally we've got the meaning right for one of these idioms. Yeah. It was supposed to be about the provenance of idioms, but we were struggling just to get the meaning most of the time.
It's the bee's knees. Is it because bees don't actually have knees?
Is it because...
Am I somewhere? Am I right? Do they not have knees? No. But turtles don't have knees, or tortoises don't have knees. They're the only animals that can't bend their legs.
Did you also know that there is no word in the medical dictionary for the back of the knee?
Is that right?
Really?
It's just called the back of the knee.
Back of the knee.
Back of the knee.
Back of the knee. It sounds Scottish, doesn't it? Back of the knee.
Is it because the bee's knees is the coldest part of their body?
Oh, what? And it's cool. No,
and it's cool. Is that where you're going with that?
Yeah.
Is it something to do with the bee's knees is an area where they pick up loads of pollen and drop it off in other places, and that's a cool thing to do in the bee neighbourhood?
What, to pick up pollen?
Yeah.
I think that's an essential part of being a bee, is picking up pollen.
Yeah, I think if you can't pick up pollen, you're a bee. You're a failed
bees
bee.
Bees definitely do.
You're just a fly.
Yeah. Bees definitely do pick up pollen with their knees.
Do they?
Not specifically just their knees, but I'm
sure. Highly evolved knees.
Yeah, I'm sure that they do get some thing on there.
So it's a bit of a trick question.
Is it the letter B?
No, there's not really an explanation for why it's the bee's knees. What actually happened is that in the 1920s, there was a craze for effectively slang words for saying cool and for saying great. So, and we have it now, right? We have words like sick and like, I mean, people from a certain public school use the word rape to mean cool.
You serious?
Yeah, no joke. The word rape is used in a few public schools to mean cool. Weird, right?
That's really weird.
But in the 1920s, they had this craze where they would make up words to mean cool, and it was like what the kids
did. A little bit like the dog's bollocks.
Like the dog, exactly. The dog's bollocks actually comes from that era. It's exactly the same time. Okay. So they had the dog's bollocks, they had the bee's knees.
The hairy nutsack? The hairy nutsack.
Is that one you know about?
Oh, yeah.
No.
So there's also the flea's eyebrows.
How bizarre.
The canary's tusks. And the cat's whiskers.
And they'd just been randomly made up.
They just made them up. And it was like a craze for using an animal and a body part. And they would take any animal and any body part. And it was kind of like a trend where you could actually make up your own version. So you could say, like, the elephant's eyebrows.
Why don't we come up with one for the Fancy Sauce Show and see if we can...
Well, let's use the back of the knee as the body part.
Okay, so what about the antelope's back of the knee?
Bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. But back of the knee is quite a mouthful. Yeah, you come up with a name for the back of the knee.
Isn't it a nape?
The
nape.
Okay, the nape. Nice. The snake's nape.
The snake's nape. I like that. That rolls off the tongue nicely.
So, if you, I think we should try and get a hashtag going.
Okay, the snake's
nape. If you see something cool this week, hashtag it. The snake's nape, spelt KNAPE.
Why do you add a K in? Oh, because it's the back of the knee. I like what you did there.
Nice.
There's some intelligence somewhere in my
knee. Somewhere in there.
It's a combination of the words knee rape.
Knee rape and snake and nape. I quite like it.
Yeah.
Snake's nape.
Snake's nape.
Okay, so the third one is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. What does it mean, first of all?
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm just trying to put it into context.
Okay, so no, it would have been, was it when you used to empty, I'm going to go for the reason more than, or where it came from rather than using it in a sentence, but it would have been that when you used to empty a bath, you'd use a bucket. And maybe a baby was the last person to get a bath, and so when you're emptying the bath, you make sure the bath's empty of all babies so that you don't accidentally scoop it up in a bucket and throw it out the window.
So how would you use it in a sentence?
We need clean water. Don't throw the baby out with the bath water.
Is that anywhere near it?
It is kind of near it, but in the complete wrong way.
Is it about not wasting things?
Yes.
Is it about the fact that... if you throw the bathwater out, then you're wasting it because it could be reused again for something else, like washing clothes, or someone else could you have a bath.
So you're confusing two parts of it. So the meaning of it is to be careful when you're throwing old things away, to not throw away something important at the same time.
Yeah.
So like if you're giving a load of clothes to a charity shop, you might not realise that actually you're giving a really expensive suit or something because you haven't worn it for ages, and really you could sell it and you could make some money from it or something. And it does come from in a similar way to what you were saying, that in the olden days, way back when they used to have baths that were filled by hand, and they would actually heat the water and then pour it into the bath, the family would bathe in a pecking order. So it would start with the dad, and then it would go to the sons, and then it would go to the mum, and then the daughters, and the last to bathe would always be the baby. And they used to joke that by the time the baby got into the bath, it was so dirty, because people would often have a bath once a week. And if there's 5, 6, 7, 8 people having a week's worth of cleaning into this bath, by the time the baby got in, it would be black. And they used to joke that it was so black that they would lose the baby in it. And when they were chucking the water out, they would forget they'd left the baby in it and chuck the baby out with the bathwater.
Interesting. That's weird, though, because I reckon I would probably wash the baby first because it's so tiny that it's not going to produce that much dirt.
Yeah.
But it's last in the pecking order.
Last in the pecking order.
time is on your side.
Yes, it is.
Move on with Lee, it's Thought of the Day!
Okay, Thought of the Day today is mine. And it is, it's a bit of a tired cliche, but it's actually been really bugging me recently, and that is there are just not enough hours in the day.
Well, surely there are the same amount of hours in every day. What? Do you just mean that every day you could
do with a bit more time?
Every day.
Also, I think that whoever created the world was a bit unfair. They made it spin too fast.
Oh, hang on. Well, let's just call God up.
Yeah, seriously.
Hey, God.
If I was going to give him some constructive feedback, I would say could have made it rotate
a bit slower. Surely a day is only however long you make it. Like, you don't have to subscribe to the 24-hour thing.
Well, no, but whether you like it or not, the sun rises and sets.
Okay, so is that what you're complaining about? Or are you complaining about the number of hours in a day? I mean, is it the night and day?
Yeah, because surely the thing is that you could... So how much you sleep is how much time you have in a day.
Yeah, and that's part of my problem. It annoys me how much we have to sleep every day as well.
You don't have to, though. A lot of very successful people sleep for like 3 hours a day. One of my friends is doing... In fact, one of your friends as well is at Sandhurst at the moment, Tom Anderson. And I saw him a couple of weekends ago, and he'd been training all week, and he had had... They work 21 hours a day, physically running around.
Bullshit.
21 hours a day.
Bullshit.
21 hours a day.
Wait.
Climbing up mountains, lying in ditches, doing ridiculous shit.
This is something that I read in a book once, is that they tried to change sleep patterns. Also, did you know that they have no actual reason as why a human needs to sleep? You'd think, okay, it's about energy and stuff like that, but then surely if there are, you know, pills for energy, energy drinks, all that sort of stuff, you put energy back into your body. So therefore, they cannot come up with a medical reason as to why you need to sleep.
I think mentally, you need to have sleep as well.
That's what I mean. Three hours a night, every night, for a prolonged period of time would make you go mad.
Yeah, it would. I agree. And then this is just for a short period of time to get you ready to go out to war and stuff. But I think, if you need to... for example, today I've had a long day. A relatively long day, not long compared to a lot of people's, but I found myself sitting in front of my computer thinking, shit, if I have to work another hour or two, I'm just going to be absolutely exhausted. I'm not going to be able to think about anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some people can work longer. We could be working now. You could work 12 to 15 hours a day if you had to.
I've easily been doing 12 hours a day.
Yeah, but also the thing is that maybe about how you sleep then. Like, as in, we sleep for it's one set period of sleep, right? So someone came up with the idea that maybe if you worked for, I think it's like 3 hours, and then you take a 15 or 20 minute power nap, then you work for another 3 hours, it would take you about 3 weeks. Like, you'd feel rubbish for 3 weeks, but then you would get into the cycle of it. Like you were saying about people that only have 3 hours sleep a night, that actually, if you get into the cycle of it, your sleep would probably be deeper, and you get used to it. So yeah, you might not be I think you would always be as effective because your body would acclimatize to it.
Yeah, I think initially you'd probably find that you're less productive in the office or at work if you haven't had enough sleep.
Or I think obviously if you said, I'm only going to sleep for 20 minutes a day, eventually you would just fall over. But there must be a thing where there must be an optimum amount of sleep. I was reading in a magazine in America that if you take a power nap for more than 10 minutes, it's actually really, really ineffective. Like, it becomes a lot worse because you get into a deeper sleep and therefore you actually can't get, start up again. Whereas I think it was 15 minutes or something, like 10.
Yeah, I think you're not supposed to sleep more than 15 or 20 minutes, otherwise you go into a deeper sleep and then it's harder to wake up. If you sleep for less than 20 minutes, I think you only stay in a really light sleep.
I think you just repeated exactly what I said, but in a more concise way.
Okay.
Yeah, it took you about 400 words and it took him 10.
You've obviously not
had enough sleep this week.
The day disappears. When you've got a lot to do, it just flies by and all of a sudden it's nighttime. You're like, fuck, I have to go to bed at some point because I've got to get up and do it again tomorrow.
I know what you mean. I do know what you mean. I think that most people don't work that hard. So I think that most people who have a 9-to-5 job probably work for 3 or 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
I really do. I think there's a lot of procrastinating.
Coffee drinking.
A lot of coffee drinking, a lot of lunch breaks. Whatever. Yeah. But if you actually said, right, I'm going to go into the office at 9 o'clock and I'm going to work all the way through to 6, then I think you could get 15 hours work of proper hardcore work.
Why don't companies that have nothing to do with like social media or anything like that just ban Facebook, Twitter? Like, all you're allowed to do is be on like your email, an internet browser that will only allow you to look at the stuff that your company, so they have a set list of things.
Some companies do ban social media.
And some companies do try to monitor their staff's workflow.
Yeah, internet usage and stuff.
I think that, like, honestly, like, I know for a fact that if I've got a lot of stuff to do in one day, I'll get it, most of the time I'll get it all done. And then when I've got one thing to do in 4 days, it will take me 4 days to do it because I will faff about it. And I'll always, as everyone does, you leave it to the very last minute and then you work. And then some people use that ridiculous, you know, I work better under pressure. So I put myself in a pressure situation. It's like,
so I intentionally wait until the day before a deadline to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, we'll just pretend the deadline's 2 days before it.
That's so hard to do, though.
Oh, I know.
If you've got a deadline in 2 weeks, you can't say, right, pretend the deadline's in 2 days and get it done.
Yeah.
It's just impossible.
Yeah, it's true.
It's strange, though, that how effective you can work when you have to get stuff done. As in, there are no excuses. Like, if you miss something, your company will miss out, or, you know, if you're ordering something and it's, you know, not there in time or something like that, you have to get it done. How quickly you can actually get things done.
Yeah, it's amazing how much you can get done in a day. Like, going from my job, which I was doing up until 10 days ago, and basically being in that typical situation where nothing had to be done for a long time, so it would always get put off, to what I'm doing now, which you guys know about, but I don't know how many listeners know that I'm trying to learn to be a developer. And, like, I'm easily working 13, 14, 15 hours a day, no problem. Like, I get into the office at 8, I have an hour lunch break, but I go for meetings in that hour, so even then, I'm still working, but it's meetings otherwise, and I get home at, like, 9 o'clock, and then I carry on working as soon as I've eaten dinner. And I'm not complaining at all, I love it, I'm really enjoying it, but actually, the thing that's starting to bug me is that even that, because I love it so much and I'm so into it, it's still not enough.
Yeah,
I want more. I want there to be more hours in a day so I can do more learning.
Yeah.
It's strange though. Like, I find that I never really switch off. Like, a lot of people that know me, you know, outside of office life and stuff, if I'm not doing necessary, like, absolute work that's essentially generating cash for the company, I'm out coming up with new ideas for little side projects or something like that. And people like the guys that I've just moved in with are like, you literally never stop, you know? And it was like, when I lost my phone last week, they were like, that must be a massive pain for you. Because obviously, as soon as you leave any Wi-Fi zone with your laptop, you're disconnected.
Yeah.
So you can't, you don't have easy access to the internet. You can't.
The internet's like modern crack. Seriously, it's like modern crack.
And if you don't have it, if you don't have it, it's bizarre how you actually kind of make do. And actually, you then, like, after, I think I didn't have my phone for 5 days or something. And I think actually what I found was that I started to realise what I could do when I was, like, on a train or something like that, and I didn't have the internet.
Yeah.
And actually, I found that I didn't procrastinate as much. Like, I didn't muck around on Facebook. I wasn't,
you know, no, I completely agree with that. Because, I mean, I was offline for two and a half months at the end of last year. Literally didn't go on the internet once. And for the first week or so, for the first 10 days, I was honestly like cold turkey heroin addict.
Yeah.
And I was getting really jumpy, and I kept like going to, I wanted to go and check the internet. I wanted to check Twitter. I wanted to like check my emails. And then after maybe 10 days or so, I kind of got into the flow of it and I started to forget about it. And actually, my time then opened up and I suddenly realised I could get a lot more done in the day because I didn't actually have access to the internet.
Yeah, because I gave up Facebook a couple of years ago just as a, I'm going to give it up for Lent or something like that.
Right.
And I was just like, and also I think I'd noticed that at work, I was just drifting into Facebook and doing stupid stuff like that. And what I found is that actually, when you don't have that distraction, it's, so, like, and now I understand why so many people turn the chat.
When you think about other things, it's probably got to be good for you, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Not using that for a period of time.
Yeah.
I think it was just good. I became far more effective about work and things like that.
Yeah.
I now understand why people turn the chat thing off on Facebook, because people just pop up, even if it's just to say hi or things like that. I mean, I use it a lot now for talking to people about like ideas or trying to generate new clients and things like that, just talking about websites and things like that. But generally, like, I find that maybe the effectiveness of making any of that turn into it, it's just more of a chat with someone or maybe making a meeting out of it. So maybe 10% of the time that I spend on Facebook ever generates cash.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's just that I think Facebook's actually one of those things that really draws you in.
Yeah. But what we're definitely not saying is that our listeners should turn off Facebook and Twitter.
Absolutely not.
If anything, they should go and find Fancy Sauce and give us a shout.
Talk to us.
Absolutely.
Do it.
Where are we again?
Facebook.com/FancySauceShow.
And then we're on Twitter as well, aren't we?
Fancy Sauce Show.
Easy peasy.
Makes sense.
Hit us up.
And if you want, check out the website, which I've been doing a lot of work on.
Nice.
Just developing some things.
Okay.
Yeah, some nice little gems there for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Just check it out. Just see the blog posts. Because there's always a blog, a little bit of a blog behind each of the episodes we do and why we're talking about stuff and things like that. We do try and put up links when we can be bothered.
Sweet.
So,
well, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone, and tune in next week.
Yep, see you then.
Ciao for now.